Our guest in this hour is Michael O'Connell, AM, a consulting victimologist. Michael has served as the inaugural Commissioner for Victims' Rights in South Australia from 2006 to 2018. Before that, he served as the state's first Victims of Crime Coordinator, and while employed as a police officer, he was appointed the state's first Victim Impact Statement Coordinator. I should be getting you to read this. He held many other positions, including with the United Nations. He's a lecturer and a writer in the field of victimology and criminal justice, as well as journal editor, if, for example, the Journal of Victimology and Victim Justice. Tonight, he joins us as the recently appointed victim advocate for Second Chances South Australia. Michael O'Connell, welcome to the Sunday Night Talk studio.
Oh, good evening to you. Good evening to your listeners. And thank you for making the time, since we made time such an issue with the opening comments.
Well, it's lovely to have you, and as I said to listeners earlier, they can't see you, although I think there is a camera in here somewhere. There's cameras everywhere nowadays, hey? But your face is familiar from the newspaper and from television reports and when you've spoken, so on, and so it's lovely to see you face-to-face. And we ought to, just to save offence, we ought to welcome also the thingy Bob. What are you, the managing director or something of...
It was International Women's Day the other day.
Yes,
you get yourself
know.
Into deep trouble.
But yeah. It's not now, so I don't have to live
it's
by those
too
rules.
Bad. I'm the Chief Executive Officer.
Chief Executive Officer of Second Chances. And it's lovely to have you too, Helen Glanville.
I don't know how you put up with him, Lorraine.
Well, he makes me laugh. That was one of the stories that we heard earlier.
Yes, what she means is I'm a laughing matter. It's lovely to have you with us tonight, Helen.
Thank you very
so
much.
So why don't we start with you and then pass back to Michael.
Oh, I was happy to give him the microphone.
Yeah, but I need to ask you, why have you appointed a victims advocate to join Second Chances South Australia?
Because the children of prisoners are the victims, the innocent victims of crime.
Mm-hmm.
The innocent, the invisible and the hidden victims of crime.
Okay. So what?
They are very important because they are all research has shown that they are 7 times more likely to go to prison than any other group in the community. That's so what?
Okay.
Wow. Okay. Let's get it straight. Why don't we?
You asked.
Love you, Helen.
I know.
Why an advocate?
Because these children need to have a voice. They are voiceless and they have a stigma and they are bullied and they are teased and they're often forgotten and overlooked. Mm. The public is generally completely unaware, and to have someone of Michael's knowledge and calibre wave the flag and fly the flame of hope for them is extremely important for the children of prisoners.
Okay, so the other male voice that we're going to be hearing in the studio for the next 40 minutes... is a voice that will be heard on behalf of children.
The children of prisoners, yes,
yeah.
In any opportunity. So tonight's a wonderful opportunity,
yeah.
And we thank you. I've just been talking, well, no, it's another opportunity, but we will be on Channel 44 later down track.
Okay.
And there will be other opportunities that we will seize.
Yeah, and to me, when I saw, 4 pages, I think, in the Advertiser... for Second Chances, and quite a bit of that was speaking about the appointment of the advocate, I thought right then and there, we have to talk about this because it is so important. Unfortunately, I think Michael was overseas, so we were unable to get him any earlier, but this was our earliest opportunity because I felt it was really important to have him in here. So, Michael, how do you feel about that appointment?
Well, it's a really important appointment to hold. For many people in the public at large, the concept of prisoners' children being a victim of crime is challenging.
Mm-hmm.
Some very readily accept because they, for example, have situations that they're familiar with where a father has perpetrated crime against his own children, mm-hmm. and he goes to prison, and so everyone goes, well, they quite clearly are victims of crime, and the services that are made available to them are quite readily available, whether it be through child protection services or if they're a bit older, rape and sexual assault service or something similar. They have access to state-funded victim compensation as the direct victims of that crime. But as the relationship between the actual perpetrator, the parent, and the child in a criminal sense becomes more distant, those people become less and less obvious. And we know that if a for example, the primary breadwinner in a family goes to prison, then that can mean that that family, the family outside of the prison, become homeless, they're not able to afford so many of the basic things that we take for granted, many of us in our lives. As Helen just said, many of those people then, we put them onto a pathway that the likelihood of them becoming both antisocial and then ultimately a criminal is significantly greater.
So what we seem to be saying there is that the community easily sees the victimisation at the point of a crime, which then causes the person to go to jail, but we fail to see the ongoing victimisation of that child because of what's happened earlier. We just, it fades a bit, does it?
Well, if a child is a direct victim of a parent's crime, so, for example, I assault a son or a daughter, then the public at large say, well, that poor child, they are quite clearly a victim of a crime. The sorts of effects that my imprisonment have on that person who is more readily accepted as a victim of crime are similar to the sorts of effects that happen to families where the child is not the direct victim of the prisoner, but the prisoner's gone off to prison.
And that's what we're not seeing.
And they're the people we don't see. They are the people who are invisible.
For example, I rob a bank,
yes,
and get sent to prison. Mm-hmm. We don't then think of my children.
That's exactly
okay.
It. And those people, you rob a bank, you go to prison. If you were the primary person bringing income into the home, that means that there is no income, no money coming to pay mortgages, to buy food, to pay for school fees, to cover medical expenses, whatever it happens to be. Mm. And as a consequence of that, the ramifications are quite significant. And an organisation such as Second Chances has recognised that, and they're working in a space which is not readily understood by most people in the community.
In reading the article in the Advertiser from Sunday, February 24, I think it was, there's also reference to things like bullying at school because the child's parent or parents are in prison, that there's a lot of negative action and reaction around that child, so much so I think that one child actually had to be completely moved out of a school because of the harassment and the bullying that took place. And I guess for me, I wouldn't have immediately seen that that was going to happen. You know, I sort of separate, yes, that's the person who's perpetrated the crime, that's what they've done, so they're being punished. But I wouldn't have seen this ongoing negative effect that happens in society to, as you say, these children who are now the victims of what has happened, even if they're not the direct victims because of the crime itself, they are the indirect victims because of the resulting behaviour of society or reaction of society even.
So one of the cases that I referred to in the Advertiser article involved a father who murdered someone, and so the child became not the innocent child, but the child of the murderer.
Yeah, absolutely.
Your dad is a horrible man.
Oh,
he killed
yeah.
this person. Turn up at school and someone says to the child, your dad's the killer, and so on and so on.
Yeah.
And so that child had to live with that stigma.
Yeah, absolutely.
And as a consequence of that constant sort of attack, and it's an attack that just gradually eats away and wears away at that person, then one of the risks is that they'll just isolate themselves. Mm. They'll drop out of school.
It means so their future is seriously damaged then?
Jeopardised as a consequence of our, broadly as a community, willingness to accept that the crime of that parent has ramifications for those innocent children.
Yes.
We're going to just take a very short break, and if you would like to give us a call on 8444 543, maybe you've been a victim in this kind of sense, maybe you are aware of a victim, there could be a whole lot of scenarios that you know about, or you just got a question for Michael O'Connell, the advocate for Children of Prisoners. That's what it is. He's the advocate for children of prisoners. Then please give us a call. Just before we go to the break, I just need to make sure we don't get ourselves into any copyright type problems here. I think all three of us, and it was me that started it, have referred to the Advertiser article, but the fact that it was on a Sunday says that it was actually a Sunday Mail article, so we do give credit to Sunday Mail.
Advertiser.com.au. I was going by what they said.
Okay.
At the top.
What's the date?
Sunday.
It was the Sunday Mail.
Yeah. Sunday, February
24. And the person who wrote the article was Rebecca Baker, so we should give credit.
Yeah, we should give
that's
credit.
Good. I just, very good.
We had all three mentioned it, and I know I said it first, so I just thought we should correct that. We got a break. You. Give us a call, 844-5433.
Sunday Night Talk, something for everyone on Adelaide's 107.9 Life.
Thank you. So, Helen, it is lovely to have you here tonight. You do a good job. Has anyone ever told you that?
Thank you, you did.
Does
Thank
my
you.
Mate Henry tell you that you do a good job?
Your mate? Yes, he does. He does a great job too.
Good. And John?
John, yes. A friend of yours, is he?
Yes, I've met him a couple
lovely.
Of times.
Excellent.
Yes, and he says you do a good job?
Apparently, yes. No, he does. You're talking about John Doyle, our patron.
Oh, no. What's your husband's name?
Oh, his name's Jeff.
Oh, well, Jeff will do.
Right, okay.
They both could begin with a J.
Yeah, I was on a J curve.
You're
there.
Doing
for some...
well, yeah.
Yeah. Oh, look, I'm just brilliant. So what kind of programs does Second Chances have for those that are impacted by criminal justice service system?
Mostly,
children?
Okay, so we do visit mum and dad in prison,
mm-hmm.
and we do empower them by giving them the choice and the option to select and ask for us to deliver a birthday present to a child, and we shift up to 30 presents each month.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the reason for doing that is to give the child acceptance, belonging, and value, because in many instances the birthdays are neglected or forgotten, and in some cases, because of the nature of the family, some cases families don't even give birthday presents.
So do you need to get the parents' permission, or do you do that so that it can be something that the parent has had a place to play in?
The imprisoned parent is empowered to make the request. On that form, they then give us the data pertaining to the caregiver, who, of course, could be a grandmother.
Mm.
And then we phone them and seek permission to deliver a present on behalf of the imprisoned parent.
Okay, that's
and
lovely.
That also is a checkout to see what the relationship is.
So what kind of reaction do you get? I mean, you know, I don't know what environment you're in, but if we watch television, there's a glass screen and my phone, or you might be sitting face to face or whatever. What sort of reaction do you get from this person when you go and make the request that you can go to the child?
You're talking about the imprisoned parent?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, they actually can do something that they enjoy the process of being able to nominate and request a present for their child. But in terms of what sort of response we get from the caregiver, we ring first, we seek permission.
Sure.
Usually it's joyful, usually it's excitement, especially if it's the Christian Motorcyclists Association doing the delivery.
Oh, yeah.
You've got to understand, too, that we repeat to the family, we are not the government. So we are in a very good position.
We aren't watching everything you do.
No, we're not non-government organisation.
Yeah.
And I think the name Second Chances SA has a nice ring to it.
So do the bikies deliver the gifts?
They do.
And do they get kids get to go for a spin?
Yeah, if they come at the right time and they're home.
And if there's a spare helmet. So when you go to the prisoners, you're talking to the imprisoned parents, do you get a high percentage of them responding positively to what you're offering?
Yes, and the reason for that is that the most recent Christmas, we provided 632 children with two brand new presents each.
How many children are there that are in this category?
Well, the Commissioner for Children of this state estimates that we have 4,000 in this state.
Children of prisoners.
Goodness. And it's being revealed by day, week by week. And to the
That's
point,
a large country town.
It's actually a greater number than the number of children in care.
Wow.
So that's the guesstimation as we speak. And why is it a guesstimation? Because nobody is counting.
Wow.
There's no federal prison system, so nobody's counting at the federal level. And prisons are managed by state governments. So, Paul, if you were admitted into prison tomorrow, they're not going to ask you how many dependents have you left behind.
Mm. Wow. That 4,000.
Potentially. I only have 1,200 on our database.
Mm-hmm.
I only have 1,200. I mean, 18 months ago it was 600, so we're growing.
But 1,200 is a big family.
It is, and we've just been out to Murray Bridge and spoken to principals of two schools. There are 10 schools in the town, and we've got sufficient information to lead us to believe it's something around 294 just in Murray Bridge alone.
Wow. That's
so
huge.
These are children who have a sense of abandonment.
Mm.
Yeah. Dad's left me. And little tackers, you know, under 10, they often go through a whole bunch of emotions like maybe it's my fault.
Yeah. Yes.
So they feel
they haven't differentiated.
Guilt. Yeah, false guilt, abandonment, maybe daddy doesn't love me. Whatever the dynamics of that family may have been, and it could even be a little bit of toxic love in there, because the 80% of all crime is drug and alcohol related. So those cultures or subcultures aren't always healthy. So while I was a little girl, I thought that every mum and dad in Australia taught their children to be honest. Right? It doesn't always happen in those families. And not is it necessary that under every roof does a parent get up and demonstrate work ethic every day.
Right. Yeah.
So we have honesty, we have work ethic, and we have respect for authority.
Yeah. Yeah.
So if by default or by demonstration a parent is demonstrating a lack of authority for the police or pastors or teachers, then unfortunately that can transfer and trickle down by default.
Well, we live
and
by
attitude.
What we've seen modelled, generally speaking.
A lot.
Yeah.
Yes.
Strong culture.
And so this is why we do. What do? We do 9 camps a year, and they are called PK, Prisoners Kids Mentoring Camps, and we take them away and we teach them basic values. And in the richness of the camps is that every child at the camp, whether they're from 8 to 12, 13 and up, we do junior teens and senior teens, they all have a parent in prison, and that gives them friendship and support.
Mm-hmm.
And we do that because we know that there's a stigma around them. They feel isolated. Mm-hmm. The mum feels isolated. They feel the shame. And so the birthday presents, the Christmas presents, the actual camps, and we do home visits.
Do you want to pop her into my place?
Do you have any kids? No, you haven't been in prison. No, you don't qualify. But it's not their crime, not their fault.
Yeah,
that's right.
That's correct.
So this is about trying to destigmatize, if you like.
Yeah.
And so if mum's not coping and the children are going to school and they're in tatty school uniforms and shoes, we want to restore their dignity.
Yeah.
So we take them out and we buy them brand new school uniforms and shoes. Mm. So my job is to pull in the resources to do that, and we do that. And so we do it by local government areas, and we do it through donations and different funding
bodies. I was
going
to say, you're very happy to receive donations for the camps and so on?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Would you like to sponsor a camp?
We did help at one.
You did. It was quite significant. I think that was in spring 2017.
Probably, yeah. And it wasn't just me.
No, it was your whole outfit, the campuses. They pulled
Salt
that
Church,
was the mission.
Yes.
That was your local mission for 2017, for which we're very grateful.
Yeah.
And
I think a couple of our youth went on the camp to help as well.
Yes, one of them in particular, and she remains to this day a very interested leader.
Her name is?
She's Polish.
She probably shouldn't do it.
Oh, yeah, we better not.
Okay.
But yes, she'll know who she is if she's listening.
That's right. And she's dynamo, absolute dynamo.
Yeah, Lorraine's right. We probably shouldn't mention names. So, oh, you got more there?
No.
Okay, Michael.
Yeah.
So, Michael, what are you actually going to do? I mean, it's a nice title, but what does it mean in practical terms?
Well, in practical terms, it means that if we take government policy, for example, and decisions around funding, that one of my functions will be to ensure that whenever there is an opportunity, that I step up and put, if you like, a voice, give these children a voice. Look at ways that we may be able to improve their circumstances. At this stage, it's not my role to be intimately involved in the programs, but these programs rely on members of the community being prepared to be engaged. They rely on people being prepared to provide some sort of sponsorship.
Mm-hmm.
And those things come with having someone who's prepared to go out, knock on doors, talk to people, speak at Probus Club, service clubs, talk on radio as we're doing this evening, and try and ensure that the message is consistent, that it's strong, and that hopefully in the not too distant future, returning back to the concept of time, we'll be able to, as a broad community, accept the fact that there is no corporate responsibility for the sins of their parents.
So would you find yourself in the courtroom for court cases of parents of children or anything? Would that be an advocacy issue?
Well, there's always a possibility that, for example, the children of a person who is about to go to prison may have a particular view. Certainly here in South Australia, where victim impact statements, you mentioned I was the coordinator of those, victim impact statements can be made on behalf of anyone who is affected by crime. Our law is quite broad. It doesn't use the word victim in the ordinary narrow sense of the person who actually suffers and as a consequence of the direct actions of someone. What's more, our Victims of Crime Act says that a victim is anyone who's harmed as a consequence of a crime, except the actual perpetrator. So we have a couple of pieces of law that accept that prisoners' children could be victims of crime. What we don't have is someone who steps up, who talks for those people, who ensures that if they have something to say that they can be heard.
So though it's recognised in the law, it's not actually yet being practically outworked to say these people are also victims and you're stepping up for that position.
Well, we've seen broadly the public at large, for example, awareness begin to improve now around people who are adult survivors of child sexual abuse. For years, some of those people came forward and asked for help and they were just ignored. It's a crime to ignore it. Mm. So over a period of time, with continual advocacy, and we mentioned before International Women's Day, well, I need to point out here in Australia that in the last 3 to 4 decades, one of the reasons that we have so many advances in the era of victims' rights is largely because of the women's movement. In the 70s and early 80s, they decided they weren't going to sit around in their sheds and just mope around. They were going to be out on the streets. They were going to be knocking on politicians' doors. They were going to be talking to people who write the law and reform procedures within government departments. Quite clearly, it took 3 to 4 decades to bring us to where we are now. South Australia is one of the leaders in the world in the victims' rights, victim assistance area. Maybe in my lifetime, I will see some improvement when it comes to the lives of prisoners' children. Mm. We all should live with some sense of hope. Mm. That's what's important.
Well, we'll take another break. We've got to keep doing these breaks. I mean, I just get very tired. While these commercials are on, I usually put my head down on the desk. And we'll come right back. But if you want to have a chat with our guests, Helen Glanville, CEO of Second Chances, or Michael O'Connell, who is the advocate for the children of prisoners, then please give us a call, 8444 5433. The night is moving on. If you've got it bursting within you to call, then please do it now.
Hi, I'm Laureen. I'm with Paul, and we are hosting Sunday Night Talk, and we have Michael O'Connell in the studio tonight. He is a consulting victimologist. That's where he's been before, yes. And I want to talk to Michael about when you first began on this journey. You were a serving police officer, and you were chosen to be in charge of
victim impact statements.
So can you please tell me, what was it about you that caused you to be appointed for that role?
Right, so in policing, when I was doing active policing work, I used to work with a female partner in the early years, so the early part of the 1980s, and we dealt with predominantly with cases involving children as victims of crime, domestic violence and like cases. We were in a period of time when, for example, in the metropolitan area of Adelaide, there may have only been 13 female police officers.
Okay.
Nothing like we imagine or see today on the streets of Adelaide. And while I was doing that work, I was fortunate enough to have two mentors. One was Ray Whitrod, who was the person who helped found the Victims of Crime Service. And while I was doing a little bit of teaching as a bit of a side from being on active police duty, I got to meet him. And he came down to the academy, and he was very strong in his advocacy for victims of crime. And because of my experiences of working in cases involving women and children in particular, I could see that there was a connection. And then a man called Harold Weir, who was the inaugural deputy director of the Australian Institute of Criminology, and he was working here as a lecturer. He became my mentor for the rest of the life. And he convinced me that there was merit in going and studying victimology at university. And that's what I did. And I suppose at that point in time, my life in the context of mentors, demonstrates how important it is to have someone in your life who you look up to, someone who you regard, someone who can guide you, who can walk alongside the path that you choose. And if you begin to sway a little bit off of what is the appropriate way, stop and have a chat with you. And that's one of the things that Second Chances for its camps offers to these prisoners' children. And then the Attorney General of the day, the Honourable Chris Sumner, who's still alive, lives in North Adelaide. Hello, Chris, if you happen to be listening to this. And he introduced victim impact statements and funded the South Australia Police to appoint a coordinator to ensure that the procedures that had been agreed between the police and the government would happen. And because I had all the attributes, they decided that they would appoint me. So I left criminal investigation, where I'd only been for a couple of years, and took on that role. And that opened quite a number of doors. One of the people I met on the way, now a retired police officer, said to me, if you get this right, one day I can see you being a spokesperson for victims of crime, not just in this state, but right the way across Australia.
Wow.
Little did he know that, in fact, it would... little South Australia would punch well above its weight.
Yes.
And our reach goes not only nationally but also internationally.
So you ended up somehow connected with the United Nations. Can you tell us about that?
So I am the Secretary General for an international organisation called the World Society of Victimology.
Wow.
Because of Australia's constitution, a state official cannot represent Australia in foreign affairs matters. So the United Nations comes under the federal government. So with my victim advocacy, I had to find an alternative way of being able to go to the UN commissions that deal with crime and victims and other matters. And so the World Society provided me the avenue, the opportunity to do that. And so now I get invited. At the moment, I'm working on a project with the United Nations Counterterrorism Office as a volunteer, helping to moderate consultation meetings in the Asia-Pacific area to try and put together a handbook with best practice guidelines on how you assist victims of terrorism in that region of the world.
Well, it makes you want to stand up in respect, doesn't it?
It does. It does, very much so. So, as you said, Michael, that those two mentors in particular really helped you form this pathway and to walk down this pathway. So who they were and their value systems and so on as they mentored you certainly got passed across, and then you've embraced some of that obviously and still been your own person and walked that way. So what would you say in all of this has been maybe the most challenging thing that you've had to be confronted with?
I think keeping true to yourself is often challenging when you're in the realm of dealing with politics, when you're dealing with angry people, and, for example, you've got a family bereaved by having a loved one killed, and so you've got that ultimate betrayal by one human being taking another human being's life, and how you help those people deal with the trauma, but deal with the emotional and psychological turmoil that they're going through can be really quite challenging. I can remember spending, in some circumstances, 10, 20 years, where there are some families that I've had contact with, and over a period of time, it would be wrong to say that you see them learn how to forgive, and because it's not our place to ever ask someone to forgive someone. That's something which an individual gives if they choose to do so. But you see over a period of time, as the anger subsides, if they've got the help, if they've been able to be given opportunities to heal, if they've not been isolated, if they've not been stigmatised, if they've not suffered secondary victimisation, many of the things we've just talked about with prisoners' children as well that they suffer, if they've not been treated in that way, if they've been treated with a sense of humanity and received the help that they're entitled to, then over a period of time you can actually see that they begin, even though they completely dislike the other person, you can see that there are fundamental changes in the way that they operate. And there's some really inspirational people who've turned their pain and anguish into helping other people, into activism. I know Anita Cobby's father over in New South Wales. He joined a prisoners' council. He joined a prisoners' organisation. He became a very strong advocate for prisoners. And the only precursor, the only caveat that he put on any of the work that he ever did was that he was never to be put in a position whereby he would be asked to judge the people who murdered his loved one.
Yep.
But otherwise, he dedicated his life to those things. Ray Whitrod and Harold Weir did similar. Harold Weir, who helped professionalise the Victims of Crime Service here in South Australia, he was heavily involved in offender aid and rehabilitation. And was very much a partner with one of the founders that led to organisations such as Second Chances being formed.
Where do I know the name Ray Whitrod? Was he a commissioner? Or
he was a commissioner who in 1974 took on Joe Bielke-Peterson and accused him of him being corrupt. He was dismissed. He'd been a South Australia police officer before that. He then went on and established the Australian Federal Police, and then in his retirement he came back to South Australia, became the patron of the Victims of Crime Service, which is now the Victims Support Service.
Yeah.
And then later in life, when he moved out of that field, he became very closely connected with Men's Health and doing and try to raise funds for research into prostate cancer and other things.
So, Helen, I've been trying to frame a question for you because I can see you've got something to say, but I just can't figure out what to ask you to get
that
out of
you. Well, what about this? What would you like to say, Helen?
Well, let's just say, in following on Michael's terminology...
Well, that's very good.
Yes, Michael's terminology of South Australia punching above its weight. When I was in the presence of the former Attorney General, I said to him, you can make this state the leading light of the nation. And soon after that, we were awarded our Gold Award from the Australian Institute of Criminology for the early intervention crime prevention that we're doing for the children of prisoners. We've gone another step. We have been in this arena for 10.5 years with children in this state. And when they finish school, we haven't got any more programs for them. And that is something that has really been quite disturbing to my heart, because we know that from 18 through to 30, all sorts of curveballs can be thrown at us in life, and they need more support.
That age also can be very formative, can't it?
It can be very formative. So I have been paddling hard underwater in lobbying the federal government. You see, we have no federal prison system, right? Mm. They don't even have a federal policy on the children of prisoners. And I'm working towards that. One of our outcomes will be we are going to influence the nation for these children. The thing is, we've just been awarded a considerable grant for a project called Getting Ready for Takeoff, and I've just come away from a 48-hour period with 12 young people who we've known over, most of them, over 10 years, and we have now the capacity to give them a life coach and hope for vocational education.
Wow.
And that really spins my wheels. Oh, it's one thing to help the children and support them and give them the strengthening factors and most of all keep them in school, because the moment you start truanting, guess what happens?
Mm-hmm.
Research says that's the beginning of the downhill slide. Mm. Antisocial behaviour and all that goes in with it. We are now in a position for the next 15 months till June 2020 to provide these kids and pay for their vocational education. So money isn't going to be an issue anymore, and we're going to put some coaching around them. I am right on the cusp of employing 2 life coaches.
Wow, that's awesome.
We've divided Adelaide into the north and the south. Why have we done this? We've done it because we know where the postcodes are, where they live. We have kept our secure CRM, our database, indicates the exact LGAs, the local government areas where they live, and they're mostly in the south and the north. And that's why we're opening offices in Morphett Vale and Elizabeth, because that's where most of our clientele live, and we want to open the door to them so we can, even just building their confidence like a barista course, a little certificate, they've got something, then a first aid course, or maybe a life-saving course, maybe getting them legal on the roads with the proper driver's licence. We want them to be safe. We want the community to be safe. So we want them to have all the hindrances that someone like Twiggy over in Western Australia faces with adults trying to get them employed are the same hindrances and barriers for young kids. So often they don't have a license, their literacy and numeracy is low, they don't have a ticket, they have health issues, or they have a life controlling issue with drugs,
or they just have a history of seeing unemployment.
Correct. And they don't understand that we there's rewards for work. Mm. There are good rewards, and it's not impossible. So we believe in early intervention. If we can get in early and put these kids on a vocational pathway that's of their choosing, something that, you know, we're all born with something that can be a passionate, something of passion that we enjoy doing.
Yeah.
And we're in the business of finding that and helping them find that.
So this is the beginning of something.
Very much so.
And I guess there's going to be evaluation at the end of it to see if it was worthwhile and what made the difference.
Well, we formed a consortium with some researchers, the same researchers that helped us do the award-winning report that won us the Gold Award. They're going to be monitoring the data every quarter.
Okay.
We have got a message to give Canberra about these kids, and we're hoping it will roll out across the nation.
And then long-term funding, because the end result is going to say, besides, this is just good economic advice, isn't it?
Mm.
If you can move these kids through into healthy and positive lifestyles, then the impact on our community is just so much better.
The objective of this particular funding, it's called Try, Test and Learn, is to break the generational cycle of welfare dependency. And we're in that business now of helping them to break the cycle, because sometimes in their thinking, they think, well, mum was on or dad was on welfare, granddad was, and generationally. And it's the same with crime. Sometimes, unfortunately, some kids think that their only destiny is to go to prison like dad and granddad. And we're in the business of breaking that, as we are now in the business of breaking the welfare dependency only for just this cohort. Mm. So we feel entrusted to help guide and give them opportunities. In the last 48 hours I've attended, I've just been thrilled to bits with the input and the dynamics and the response, because if only some people have come and told their stories and they're in their 30s and they said, if only I knew this in my 20s, I wouldn't have made some mistakes and ended up in detention or in prison.
Yeah.
So you're building quite a team of celebrities around you now.
That's the plan.
And
would you like to join us, Paul?
I said celebrity.
Yes. Well, you know, we've got a vacancy for a board member. I've already told you this.
I'm as bored as they come.
Oh, yeah, right.
I understand your ambassador went to prison recently.
Yes, he did.
Dear Henry, what did he do?
He went and sang.
Oh, you can go to prison for singing now?
Yes, he sang and he entertained the crowds. The one and only normal day in the entire year of a low-security prison in Cadell is the second Saturday in December, and we take in the Christmas angels' presents. There's about 100 children there at that family.
You're not telling me that Henry's an angel.
Yeah, well,
all people are angels.
He tried.
All people are angels, but some are just fallen ones.
You see, he sings opera. You may or may not know.
Well, he sang here for us on the station.
Did he now?
Yeah,
yes.
The Lord's Prayer.
Oh, very good.
Without music, we couldn't get his gadgets to work.
Is that right? He likes his gadgets.
I know, they never work though.
That's technology for you, isn't it?
So
it might be Henry, not technology.
he has his own studio, by the way.
Does he?
Yeah, he's. You're going to watch this space, but in a few months you're going to see him perform elsewhere. And he also sang for us at our fourth anniversary, which took place at the Arca Bar on the 1st of February. Jane Doyle stepped in as our MC.
Great.
Next year we've got Raggy. Brenton Ragless is going to MC it.
We had him on last week.
Yes, I'm sure.
Oh, no,
he's a special
man.
Guy.
Yeah.
But look, Henry.
You saw it here first on Sunday Night Talk.
Yeah.
Well, Henry wowed the general manager of that prison.
Oh, I bet he did.
And he said, Helen, you introduced me to this man. And he said, then I Googled him. And he said he was so humble.
Mm. Yes.
And I said, yeah. You wouldn't know he was an international cricketer. He's a chatty friend.
Is the word enchanting? He's mesmerising.
Yeah, I think you could use that.
Charming, you're right. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Very smooth.
Yeah, yeah, you can understand how he found himself.
Charisma.
you can understand how he found himself an Aussie wife, can't you?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, yeah.
And living in Adelaide, which is a bonus. But I heard him sing at the Adelaide Prayer Breakfast in 2015.
Yes, I was there too, yeah.
And I thought, I want him.
Yeah.
That's why I just sat there and thought, I'm going to get him.
Oh, so you got him after that?
4 months. I waited 4 months. He had to go back to London to tidy up some business.
Yes, that's right.
And I kept in tack with Tara, his wife, and waited. And the moment he came to Adelaide, I was in his house.
Yeah. Hey, Henry, we know you're listening. Give us a call, 844-5433. Beat the rush. Get in now. So, Michael, what do you see as your next step?
most probably finishing this program in 15 minutes.
Not a long-term vision. I admire that, my man.
That's not nearly as long-term as Helen's.
We had that every Sunday night.
Grant Action Road. Which, for the first time in many years, has no roadworks on it, which I'm quite impressed about.
Oh, yeah. That's good. Yeah.
Look, this role is new. It is an inaugural role. It's going to be a role that will evolve, and as far as I'm concerned, my challenge is to be as flexible as I can, because we have to accept that there are diversity in both need, but also of these children, but also diversity in terms of opportunity. Mm. For example, at the moment there are inquiries going on about victims' rights. Mm. And is that an opportunity for me, by way of a submission, helping Second Chances write a submission to draw attention to this particular group of children as victims of crime? As Helen pointed out, the federal government has no policy around federal prisoners. We do have federal prisoners. What they do is they pay the states and mainland territories to house those people in their prison system. That we have no federal charter on victims' rights. Mm. So even these victims in an ordinarily understood sense are just not recognised in our federal system, yet alone the prisoners' children. So there's a lot of opportunity for advocacy, but the advocacy has to actually bring about improvement. Yep. And that's really, for me, that should be the goal. Whatever steps I can take to ensure that we improve the outcome for these children, because every child has a right to innocence, every child has a right to opportunities, and we as adults need to ensure that we've painted out an appropriate pathway for them to seize those opportunities.
I guess because we're dealing with children, and in particular children of prisoners, it might give you a slightly louder voice in advocacy for victims in general by saying, here's a group of victims that we need to be making general laws to help.
Well, I posted some information about being appointed a victim advocate onto a Facebook page that I run, and it was really interesting to see how many people put comments which indicated that there was an awareness but not a formal acknowledgement.
Wow.
They're aware that crime is affecting families in this way, but not exactly sure how do you acknowledge that. How do you give some sense to that in terms of the things that can happen? Mm. And I think, you know, out of 2, 3, 4 dozen comments, there might have been just one negative comment from someone who was a little angry. But otherwise, I think that what we've already achieved in drawing some attention through the publicity in the media, coming on a program like this, it all adds to giving a voice to these people. If you think about it, 3 months ago, we might not have been having this conversation.
Mm. Yeah, because now's a good time to be lobbying government at a federal level, because both sides are wanting to make announcements, aren't they?
Well, yes, because we're having that pre-election period where we're not preparing for an election.
Exactly right. And now, you know, this is the time when you can get their attention. We're going to...
Well, we hope so.
Yeah.
We hope so.
We're going to take a short break. We'll come back and wrap this incredibly interesting segment up, and then towards the end of the program. Paul and Laurie Newsham with our guests. Let's go the other way around this time. Helen Glanville and Michael O'Connell from Second Chances. Michael, we know Helen, and we know that she has a fairly strong faith. Do you have a faith?
I certainly do. Mm-hmm. And in fact, that's one of the attractions to being able to do the job that I've been asked to do, to be an advocate. I mean, Jesus said that we shouldn't judge children by the sins of their parents at the time when the disciples were mocking him and the like. When he was with children, he rebuked them and pointed out that in his children is our future. So I think it's really important that we learn those lessons.
Yeah.
There's much to be said in the biblical sense, but also in all of the faiths in the world, children play a key role, and I think that's really important.
Yeah, beautiful. That's nice, isn't it? Mm,
it is.
It's you know, because we're both ministers of religion. Am I still a minister of religion?
Yes.
Oh, good. We're both ministers of religion.
And, it's just he's just retired, you see, so.
Kind of retired.
I'd kind of retired as well. Yeah, and it gets complicated like this, especially when you've got women like Helen walking behind you, giving you a push.
And as ministers of religion, you know, we like to base the things we do and say on some kind of theology So really theology in the sense of what does God think about this, what's his opinion on it. So that's beautiful that you've brought in that little bit of theology there that makes it not only a benevolent act, but it makes it something that our Creator God is interested in.
Well, Jesus, when he was here, never corporatized the sins of other people. Mm. He didn't judge the families of sinners. Mm. He told us how we ought to judge at sinners and pointed out that we should all comply with the laws of our land, but at the same time, we all face a divine person eventually.
Beautiful. Well, we really do wish you guys all the best. And Helen, please, when you've got some other big announcements, keep us in mind. We love to break news here. We love to break anything, actually, but news is good. So keep us in mind. Yeah, Laureen, would you like to pray for Second Chances and in particular, but let's say for Michael, especially because of his role?
Absolutely. Love to. Father God, we thank you for compassionate people. People that have seen past the mud, past the difficulties, past the awkwardness, and seen lives of people desperately in need of someone to speak for them and to act for them and to help them to see hope and a future. So, Father God, we pray particularly for Second Chances and everything that they do and for the role that they play in the future of the children of prisoners, PKs. Pray for Helen, Lord, in her vision and in the team that she leads, that they will continue to increase their influence and to have the wide impact and to actually make a difference across our nation. And Father, we thank you for Michael coming on board with this as an advocate. We thank you for the walk that he's walked to this point of time, for the places that he's been, for the lessons that he's learned, for the training that he's had to come to this point and be able to partner with Second Chances to be an advocate for the children, advocate for the work that's happening. And Lord, we're believing to see amazing things come out. So we pray that you'll open doors for them, doors of favour, that the words that they have will be words that are impacting and influential. And Lord, that we will see positive results of this next season in their lives, in Jesus' name. Amen.
Michael O'Connell, thank you so much for being with us tonight, and we look forward to hearing major achievements as a result of what you're doing.
Thank you very much to you and to your listeners, and let's hope we've stirred up a little bit of interest in those people are listening to us.
And for those that are interested, Helen, before we let you go, can you give us some contact details for Second Chances?
Yes, our website is secondchances.org.au.
It's easy.
And the phone number is 8272 0323, but there's more. Next Sunday night on Channel 9, South Aussie with Cozzy at 5:30 is going to play our 11-minute video that you can also find on the website.
Wow, incredible.
That's great.
Well done.
Excellent.
Cozzy's a fan, and so we're thrilled because he's come to the conclusion it's not their fault.
Wow, wonderful. Well, thanks so much to both of you for being with us from Second Chances, and we do look forward to hearing the big announcements in the next months. God bless you, and we're just going to have a short break, and then we'll be right back to finish the night.